Hello, everybody. Welcome to the ICA. Welcome to the SA Film Festival. My name is Michael Temple. I'm the director of the festival, which I organize with many wonderful people, including Matthew Barrington, who's here today with us. So thank you to Nico Marzano for hosting this part of the SA Film Festival this week. I've been handing out the program for the festival, so I just encourage you to come and see as many things as you can. There are screenings here at the ICA over the weekend, so there's a, most of you will have seen, there's another Manicole after this one. We're going to be showing Drupad. And tomorrow we have the Otolith Group's latest film, which I suppose is, well, it's a UK cinema premiere, we're calling it, third part of the third measure. And we'll have discussion with the artists after the film. And then tomorrow evening, I really can't praise highly enough the Portuguese film Luz Obscura, which is an amazing historical essay film. And the, we're very fortunate to have the, it's a UK premiere, we're very fortunate to have the filmmaker Susana de Souza Dias, who's coming to discuss the film afterwards. So, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we have screenings here at the ICA. Again, basically premieres with the filmmakers present. So by all means, come and join us, spread the word amongst your friends. And we also have some great events at Birkbeck during the day, if you want to have a look at those. And those have the great advantage of being free. Okay, so this is the third of our four events around Manicole, who's kind of our main focus this year at the festival. Last night we had a very good house for Uski Roti. And during the day we had a really super little symposium at Birkbeck in our cinema. And one of the participants in that was Valentina Vitali, who gave a great paper. Valentina is, some of you may know, she's a film historian, she's a professor of film at University of East London. She does many wonderful things, but she's also, and she's particularly very strong on Indian cinema, which is why we wanted her involved. And she's going to give a brief introduction to Mati Manas, which is a 35mm print, I should stress. So this screening and the next one are both 35mm. And all of this has been done in collaboration with the Otolith Group and also with our friends at the Courtesan Film Festival in Ghent. So I'd just like you to welcome Valentina Vitali. Thank you very much.
Oh, I think you might have to. Oh, sorry. Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Can I have a sense of who saw watched Uski Roti last night? So quite a few of you know who Manicole was. I don't need to speak too much to say anything about that, except perhaps that he's, along with Kumar Shahani and a few others, one of the main figures of New Indian cinema, which was, let's call it a cluster of films that were sponsored by the Film Finance Commission, a government body in India, starting 1969, 71, and later. So it's most of these films are sponsored with public money at a particularly interesting time in India, but also the beginning of a very troubled time. So what I'm going to do today in the next 10 minutes, and I don't want to speak more than that, is to give you a couple of pointers so that, this is one of those films that you can actually, like many other Manicole films, it's one of those films that you can just watch without knowing much about anything because it's very beautiful. But I'm going to give you a couple of pointers so that you can actually appreciate it in a perhaps more historically informed way. It's a film, Mati Manas, was made in 1984. It's a film about the ancient tradition of terracotta pottery and sculpture, and several legends associated with this tradition across India. The film was shot in South, Eastern and Central India, though the filmmaker deliberately suppressed the location so you, in order to present a kind of an idea of an integrated civilization. And that is very important at this particular point in India. So what are these legends and why terracotta pottery? Why did it matter? Why may have mattered in 1984 in India? Now, first, the legends. The first legend is the legend of the Sariya Mata, or cat mother, whose kittens remained safe in the interior of a baked pot. It is a legend that is associated with the archaeological site of Harappa, where Hindus, valleys, civilizations, remains were found. And I'll tell you a little bit more about the Hindus Valley civilization, including human skeletons buried in womb-like pots. The second legend is the legend that features the witch Gangli, and she transforms Gora into a bull by day, and she makes him work in her oil press until finally Gangli, the witch, is beheaded by Gora's friend, Kala. Gora and Kala have names which are associated with dark and light, referring also to the skin. It is a legend that in the film is connected with the Mesopotamian legend of Gilgamesh and Enkidu. And that Mesopotamian connection is important. And the third legend features Parashuram, who is an avatar, an incarnation of Vishnu, who beheads his own mother, Renuka, with his axe. And although eventually she's brought back to life. Now, interwoven with these legends, which are effectively evoked, they're not told in the film, just evoked through the pottery. And so a story is narrated by the potters themselves, and fictional sequences which features historians talking about the legends, looking at the terracotta artifacts. Now, the terracotta pottery, the archaeological, not the one that is made as you watch the film, but the terracotta pottery, the archaeological ones that feature in the film, date back to something called the Indus Valley Civilization. It's a civilization that dates 3,300 BC to roughly 1,300 or even 1,700 BC. This is a kind of regarded as a kind of foundational moment, a foundational civilization, and at the same time, a bit of a mystery, or quite a bit of a mystery. It was a very powerful, long-lasting civilization, predating the introduction of agriculture in northwest India, of perhaps hunter-gatherers, so perhaps just pastoral civilization. It worshipped perhaps fertility, and it was possibly, I'm not sure, I'm not an expert, matriarchal. It preceded, and this is the important point, it's a civilization that preceded Aryan Vedic Hindu culture in India, which is instead an agricultural culture and very patriarchal culture. Interesting things about Indus Valley civilization is that it had very little evidence of weaponry was found on the sites, whereas a lot of evidence was found of cultural links with the West in relation to India, so with Mesopotamia, especially trade connections. Now, the other interesting thing about the Indus Valley civilization is that it came at an abrupt end. No one really knows why it ended, this enormous, apparently very powerful society. And we still don't know why. Some have argued that it may have been destroyed by the civilization that succeeded it, by Aryan civilizations. Others have argued that it actually disappeared because of natural disaster. And the other important thing about it is that the script of the Indus Valley civilization is still not decoded, so we can't read. The thing that runs across, and this is the subject of the film, from 3300 BC, pre-Vedic culture, through to contemporary India, passing by centuries and centuries and centuries of Vedic culture and then Mughal culture, and so is pottery. So pottery links this, it's the kind of thing that straddles across this huge passage from matriarchy to patriarchy, from hunter-gathering to agriculture, from bronze to iron, from trade to relative isolation. So pottery links this. And why did may have mattered? Why make a film about pottery? Or rather, okay, let's say that Manikul was commissioned a film about pottery, but what does he make of it, what this link? Now, 1984 is the year when Indira Gandhi, Prime Minister of India, was killed. She was killed by her security guards, who were, Sikhs. She was killed in retaliation of Operation Blue Star, which was a fairly brutal operation by the military, which was ordered to attack and did attack the Golden Temple in Amritsar. In India at this moment, and the anti-Sikhs pogroms that followed really marked the beginning, or rather the return, to communal violence. So it sort of bubbles up from 1984 and 1982, 84 onwards, until it really reaches a peak in 1982 with the Bombay, with the communal riots following the issue of the Babri Masjid, the construction of a Hindu temple over a mosque. So Sikhs against Hindus, Hindus against Muslims, it all sort of starts going really badly. And by the time Manikul made Matimanas, ideas of Indian tradition were increasingly being mobilized in this set of tensions, and especially by very regressive, fundamentalist, fanatical political forces. So religious iconography, mythology, legends, folk tales, epics, popular traditions and cultural practices all sort of becomes material that is really contended by these political struggles for recognition or obliterations. Now, all of this was being scooped up, and from the second half of the 1980s, and especially after, it is being scooped up and reconstructed. It's a syncretic set of traditional practices and legends, and so, which is being grabbed and reconstructed, reformatted as fundamentally Hindu. And even within Hinduism, very Brahminical, cleansed of any kind of syncretic, low caste, or folk elements, or elements that may come from other religions or other persuasions and cultures, with the inevitable consequences that anything and anyone unwilling or incapable of sort of fitting that, conforming to that particular set of practices prescribed by Orthodox Hinduism, is gradually but relentlessly rubbed out, not only excluded from the Indian polis, but also really rubbed out from the cultural history of India and from the cultural sphere. And this is where the importance of revisiting this obscure foundational moment of Indian history, the Indus Valley civilization, this pre-Aryan, pre-Hindu moment, when India, as presented by Manikul, was a kind of a section of India was an integrated culture, which comprised also cultural strands that came originally from and were shared with Middle Eastern culture. Strands which as today's potters and their techniques show, are still with us today, with Indian culture today. The very same potters and techniques, well, not the very same potters, but certainly the very same techniques used also today to make and fashion Hindu deities. As I said, the beauty of this film, and here I'm going to stop, in my opinion, is that it really avoids the grand narrative. You're not given a kind of grand narrative of Indian civilization from the Hindus or whatever. That's really not. And there is a reason for that, not simply because Manicol did make film that way, but also because that grand narrative was much too instrumentalized by Indian nationalism. So he steers well away from that. And instead he focuses really on the tiny details of the labor involved in this pottery. So you have beautiful moments in the films where you see how these different artisans work at the pottery and making different objects and so. There's a lot of care and a lot of love into the pottery, but also in the camera that looks at this artisan work. So I hope you enjoyed the film. I hope some of this helps. And I'm sorry I can't be here, unfortunately, but you're lucky, really, really. It's such a luxury to be able to see the 35mm print. So enjoy.